Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
My microphone won't pick it up, but as I walked into my office, the soft, gentle sound of rain on the rooftop was very nice.
Pitter patter.
Yeah, I get more of that here because all I have is the roof and like a little bit of insulation. But I'm much closer to the roof sounds than I am in the rest of the house.
And you're closer to nature, Jason.
I am. Raindrops keep falling on my roof. But it's nice. I grew up, we had a tin roof where I grew up because I grew up in the sticks. And let me tell you, boy, that sounded good. That when it rained, like it, you really heard it. And it's just like the best white noise, I think. Mm-hmm. I always found it very, very comforting and enjoyable when you could hear the rain. Like here, you can hear the rain when you're in the garage or when it's raining really hard. But it was just like little explosions going off every time a raindrop hit our roof when I was a kid. I loved it.
The cat ever get up there on like a warm summer day?
You know, we had dozens of cats and were there for like 20 years, 25 years. I think my parents lived in that house. And it took about 20 years for a cat to figure out how to get up on the roof because my parents would leave their bedroom door, their bedroom window open. Mm. It was the only room that was on the second story of the house. And one day a cat came in. And that cat was apparently the smartest of all the cats we ever had, because no other cat got up on the tin roof.
Mm. And that is where
it was a hot day too. Strangely.
Yeah, it was a hot day. The cat's where the cat in the hot tin roof came from.
Yeah,
that's the origin.
Anyway, cats, weather. It's a podcast. Yeah,
the usual.
It's how I finally wrote up. So I had a moment. I don't even know what made me think of it. I had a moment where I realized. I did a search and I realized that although I had had this whole experience with buying more storage for myself back in like May, April, I had never written about it. I told the story on Upgrade, but I never written about it. So that was the member post this week. I wrote a sort of detailed story, which is in many parts talking about, you know, what do you want to buy big storage and what are some options and you should back up your stuff. That was a big message for me is you should back up your stuff. So I did that. Mostly it settled down to where it's working pretty great. The big change, and somebody pointed this out, the big lesson that I learned is even though I had a drive, it was a Drobo 5D, so it was five drives, and it was one of these RAID 5, basically, Drobo's version of that, which is where the data's all on multiple drives, so if one of your drives dies, you just pop it out and pop in a new drive and you don't lose any data, which is great, and I did that with the Drobo a few times. Problem is if the Drobo died, which it did, the hardware itself, you can't get to the data. And in Drobo's case, that is a proprietary Drobo format. And I didn't have a backup because it's my huge hard drive. I didn't have a backup of my huge hard drive. I did have an online backup of it, but I didn't have a local backup of it.
Right.
And that was the big hole. So now I did buy a two disk enclosure with two giant hard drives in it. And I plug that in every couple of weeks and just duplicate the contents of my giant server hard drive. And that wasn't cheap. But I learned my lesson there, which is I thought that I could get away with not having a complete backup because I could just like re-rip those Blu-rays and stuff. And when I suddenly was faced with the idea that I was going to lose all the movies that I had ripped over ages, I thought, oh no, I don't want to do that again. I never want to do that again. Mm-hmm. At which point, I bought the new hardware. Plus my four disc RAID that I've got with Soft RAID, which is a Mac app that does the rating part, and it all has worked very well. I haven't had a failure yet. That's going to be the true test, because when one of those drives dies, because spinning hard drives die, I will have to pull it out and put in a new one, and all my data should still be there, and I want to go through that process. But otherwise, it's actually been pretty good. My only complaint about it, really, is that just like the Drobo, the Thunder Bay that I have now, it's noisy, because it's four hard drives spinning around in there, and I keep thinking I'd like to put it somewhere else, but I'm not sure there's a better place for it in my house than where it is now, which is about 5 feet away from me. Yeah. I don't have I don't have a basement. I don't have an attic. I don't have a server closet. I don't have a closet with power and internet and Ethernet. I don't have any of that. So short of sticking it in my son's bedroom where he's going to have to hear the ticking sound of the hard drive. Yeah,
but youth, you know.
Yeah. No, yeah, they have
they
better
hearing. Deal with diversity. Yeah, but they should deal with the diversity.
Yeah,
I think they
right.
should know what it's like. So you told the story about the rain on the roof, and when he grows up, he can be like, when I was a kid,
the white noise.
My dad put the server in my
raid
bedroom.
Yeah, that's true.
Spinning hard disks. They'll all be wondering what hard disks. Those were the days.
His closet actually is where my server used to live. There is Ethernet and power in there because that's where the server used to live. But I did remove it from there eventually.
When I was in college, I built a Linux. I had a Linux box made of sort of like leftover components, and it ran essentially network address translation for the apartment because those were the days where you got a router and you know. You might just have a cable modem or whatever, and you didn't. So it basically set it up so they could run all the... It was a router, essentially, right? You know? Mm-hmm. And it lived in the closet of my bedroom until we eventually added, wireless, started to become a thing then. And that was a great moment because we lived in this house in college where it was six apartments on three floors. It was like a three-floor house. Each floor had two apartments. And my friends lived across the hall. So I lived in an apartment with four bedrooms. There was a two-bedroom apartment across the hall from us. And then below them, another two-bedroom apartment that some of my other friends lived in. And being college students on a budget, even before I think the Wi-Fi really took off, we eventually bought a router. And then we realized that all the hall closets connected, like our hall closet backed on the next door hall closet. And then that was above. So we drilled holes, ran Ethernet through all of those.
Oh, nice.
Ran it off one single router, one internet connection, and it worked great.
Yeah. Yes. Landlord, now all your apartments have a hole connecting
Small
them
holes
to the
in the back of the closet. Whoever saw it. We might have spackled it after.
Yeah,
I think we kept passing that apartment to other people that we knew. So, it was convenient that way.
That's great. Anyway, if I can think, I continue to ponder if I could move the server maybe like to the other side of my garage office where there's like storage and stuff. But if I could carve out a little space back there, because that's the one. It's not that bad, but you can hear the hard drive ticking.
I have the
away.
Same issue because the NAS that I use, the Synology, is on the TV. It's nestled in the TV stand because it. I don't remember. I don't think it even has Wi-Fi. I think it's Ethernet only, and that's where the switch is. Because I have the Eero, and it's like it needs a hard connection. And
so here's my question for you: in the new house, are you going to have a server closet?
You know, I'm just thinking about this now. It's like there isn't really a great place to put one. It would probably either have to be. I mean,
like John Syracuse has got his Synology in his basement, apparently, which is not damp, according to him. He was very offended.
Yeah, I would not risk that with the one basement in our house. It's not like a wet basement, but it's not. It's a basement in the Northeast. A lot of them are damp. I don't know. I mean, when we eventually move in, I'll have to figure this out. But like, I imagine that the Eero setup I have right now, I have two Eeros. One would be probably down by the TV and another would probably be up by in my office because those are where the Ethernet requiring stuff is supposed to be. So I think the, Synology might just end up living in my office.
In your office, yeah.
Yeah, which is not, ideal, but it's better than having, nobody wants a, a two hard drive, box sitting in their TV stand.
Nobody wants that. When my TiVo died recently, I realized that I had blocked it out, but the sound of a big hard drive spinning away in the cabinet underneath my TV, once it was gone, I was like, oh, yeah. You really could hear that hard drive spin, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's
the problem is there's as much as I'd like to get rid of Ethernet, there's some stuff that just works so either requires it or works so much better over it. Like for example, I've got my Xbox and my Apple TV. I think they're both I believe they're both hardwired into a switch because it's just better performance. Like the Apple TV is fine, but I've run into problems with it in the past over Wi-Fi, and it's rock solid on an Ethernet connection. And the same thing the Xbox. Yeah, it has Wi-Fi, but, if you're playing any sort of games that require response time, Ethernet is just better.
Okay, let's see if the cat will talk. There's a cat on my desk now. Meow. 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 Will you talk? No. Nope. She's not talking. She's right here. Anyway, there's a cat here. A cat has climbed on my desk. It's I don't let the cats roam around on podcasts, but this one is special. Yeah, you don't want the soft ticking of data as it's read and written on your hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want that in my office either. I mean, I have a closet in my office, or I will, but then, you know, I would need power.
Yeah,
you know, networking.
I will say that where really I notice it is I'm sitting here and suddenly there's a that happens, and I think, for them, that wasn't a cat, that was me making noises. But I think to myself, why is there a lot of reading going on? And then I'll realize like it's Time Machine or something like that. And it's like, well, that's not great, right? It's not great when you can actually, like, you're processing those sounds and then thinking about them. It would be much better if it was invisible. But the truth is that I need a lot of storage space, and SSDs aren't there yet. So it's just going to spinning disks. Like, I've gotten spinning disks out of all the rest of my life, but those spinning disks remain for now because they just are huge.
Two attached to my iMac, so I have one of those 12 South stands because the iMac is very low, and it needs to get. I need to raise it, and so it has a couple little shelves in it, which is nice. And so I hung a couple. Just bought some I think I don't remember if they're Seagate drive. I think they're Seagate drives, but they're bus powered, so they don't require a bulky power adapter.
Oh.
And I just pop them inside the stand, and one is a Time Machine backup and one is a Super Duper clone.
Oh yeah, I have that, but I did buy SSDs for that. I have an SSD that's my backup drive that is just attached to my iMac and tucked behind and completely invisible and silent, which is nice.
Yeah, those are nice. I mean, again, it depends on, yeah, like you said, the storage is an issue because it really depends on how big, how much you can afford, right? Like, And whether it's big enough to handle, I mean, something like a backup, like I could probably, my NAS is only 4 terabytes. It's 2 4-terabyte drives and they're mirrored. And so, I don't have those backed up to a separate local backup, kind of like the position you were in.
Right.
But I do have them backed up to Backblaze.
Well, and mirrored is different, right? That means if one of them dies, the other one is still completely
pop
functional.
One in. It also means you only get half the space, right? Like, 2 4-gig drives is still only four gigs, which is the downside, because then you have to buy bigger and bigger drives and realize, you're paying for 2 drives worth, but only getting 1 drive worth of storage.
Well, I have 32 terabytes of drives in my RAID, but it's only 20 terabytes or something like that. I'm only using about 13 terabytes, 12 terabytes right now. But the rest of it is the redundancy, right? Like it's copying that data into multiple places and all that. And you're losing some space, but you're gaining redundancy. And having been through that with the Drobo, that's great. Like that is like reason number one to get a RAID is you get this, hard drives die. I said it before, I'll say it again. Spinning hard drives die. They die. They will die eventually. Like 100% guaranteed. Even the best one ever made, it will die because they can't keep spinning forever. They will die. Right. And so the redundancy means that that they probably won't die. Although there's a new version of SoftRAID coming out that does RAID 6, which is double redundancy. You can lose 2 drives.
Oh, wow.
But the chances that 2 of your drives are going to die simultaneously
fairly low.
Is low.
Having, like, a power failure. Or something,
so you get one dies, you pull it out, you put in a replacement, and your life continues as normal. That's a beautiful thing because, and I did that, like I said, I think 3 times, 4 times with the Drobo where that happened, where all of a sudden it's like, okay, drive number 2 is going to fail. So you should pop it out and pop in a new one. And I actually keep some spare drives around for that, like just ready to go in a moment of need. But it's pretty great. That part of it I really love. It's just that if the hardware dies, then in this case, if the hardware dies, I need to get another 4-disc RAID 5 thing, like I did when I got it's in my Drobo story. The amazing part of the Drobo story is that my data was fine. It was just the Drobo itself that died, and I bought an identical Drobo on eBay, plugged in the drives, they came up, all my data was there, I copied it off, popped the drives out, and sold the Drobo on eBay for $100 profit.
That's the dream right there.
Oh man!
Like you were a temporary. You rented a Drobo.
I did.
Essentially.
I did sell it
except
better
for negative. I
guess I did sell it better than I bought it because I had my power cable and my the little faceplate for it because those were part of my dead Drobo, and the one I bought on eBay didn't come with the power adapter or the faceplate, and so when I sold it back, it was like complete with power adapter and faceplate. It was like $100 profit for that, which was awesome because all I really was using it for was a way to get my data off of it because I'd already bought and set up my new storage array at that point, and I didn't really want to be in the business of relying on, you know, 7-year-old Drobo hardware.
It is tough though when you want a piece of hardware that like is not easily available as much anymore too. Like mm-hmm. I was just thinking about this in
oh, I was so lucky to find it on eBay at all. That one was right, for sale yeah. right then on eBay. I was super lucky that happened.
Yeah, I've run into this recently. I have a Logitech Harmony remote that mm-hmm. I use, and one of the buttons has died, and it's the left D-pad button, which is an inconvenient button to die.
Oh, Dan, I have good news for you. I have an extra one of those because my
base station died. So does Lex Friedman, and he offered me one.
All right. I had to buy
but
a new
if he doesn't
set.
Come through, I'll keep okay. you in mind.
All right. Yeah, I'm saving it just in case something happens to the remote that I bought. Because, yeah, I had my base station basically fried. And so I got a new whole setup, and it comes with the remote. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I tried to, but like, I'm not sure Logitech is making that anymore, or at least they were not available on Amazon currently. And so I was like, oh yeah. No, like, do I have to find something else? So I bought another smartish remote thing off Amazon because it was like $40. And I was like, oh, I'll give it a try. And I got it the other day, and I spent some time setting it up, and I got to the point where I concluded it's just not, like, the remote is fine. The hardware is fine if a little bit cheap, but it's just not, this pains me to say because Harmony software is kind of terrible, but it turns out it's one of those things where it's the worst except for everything else. Mm-hmm. Because I tried to set up this new remote and I was just getting, it could not do, it doesn't have certain niceties. Like if you have the Harmony and multiple activities set up and say you go from watching your Apple TV to turning on your Xbox, yep. it's smart enough to realize like, hey, the TV and the receiver are already on. Don't mess with that.
Yes.
Just switch the inputs. Whereas yep. this one's like, nope, going to turn everything off. And then going to turn everything back on again. And it's like, well, that's stupid.
That's really dumb.
Yeah. And some of the things are nicer in terms of like the app itself, since it's all managed via an app and you pair, because it has Bluetooth, so you pair directly to the remote. And it's a lot faster at pushing like updates to the remote and stuff like that. But the software is just, it's not all there. It's not entirely smart. Anyways, I'm very happy with the Logitech remote and have been because it's just a button remote. Like my complaint with it, if anything, is that there are some features I like on the Apple TV that it doesn't have. But I do keep, so I keep the Apple TV remote around because every once in a while we want to use Siri to say like, oh, what did that person say? And have it use that feature where it jumps back and turns the captions on, which is a great feature. And I wish there was some way to sort of pass through that information via the Harmony remote. Mm-hmm. But obviously it doesn't have a mic or anything, but like if they did. But it is one of those things where it's like, I wish there were a better solution. Like I get by with the Harmony remote because I've had it set up the way I like it. Even with that, it sometimes gives me problems because like devices get stuck in the wrong power state or something like that. And you have to like spend some time fiddling with it. But most of the time, it's fine. It's just, you know, nobody, because Logitech, I find, is one of those companies that's bought up a lot of other media-related companies, there really isn't as much competition in that market. Like, I went to look at the Wirecutter to see, like, oh, are there any other remotes that have come out in the last few years? I think the recommendations are still 100% Harmony remotes.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, well, okay. Guess I'm sticking with this for the moment.
Cat, the other cat came and meowed on the podcast, so that's something.
Got a full cat load over there.
I'm hesitant to do this, but I'm going to do it, which is, you mentioned the Apple TV remote, and I'm going to mention 9to5 Mac wrote a piece yesterday by Parker Ortolani, who I've met and is a very nice guy, and I'm not trying to be mean to him, but he wrote a piece that is his concept for a new Apple TV remote.
I sent it to Lex and John Moltz with something like, I think I hate this.
This is legitimately the worst idea I've seen on the internet in a long time. And I'm sorry, Parker, but his suggestion is that the Apple TV remote should be an iPod Nano. basically, like a touch screen with a couple of side buttons and a home button, but otherwise it's basically running watchOS and using a version of the remote app. Now, as a gadget, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Although my problem with it is everybody's got an iPhone, and this is akin to Apple saying, one, you got to use your iPhone to control the Apple TV, which you know, you can already do, and no thank you. Yeah, and two, we're going to, I guess, make you pay for an iPod Nano.
How expensive would that be? It's already like $70 for this Siri remote.
But leaving all of that aside, the problem with the Apple TV remote is the same problem, actually, in some ways, as the Touch Bar, which is, it's a device that is meant to be operated on feel, that requires you to look at it. And the other problem with the Apple TV remote, and with this especially, right? It's a touch screen. You can look down. It's like, if I have to look down at my remote control, the remote control has failed. I don't ever want to look at my remote control. I'm watching TV. I want to do it all on feel. And so that is a misfire completely, I would say. But the other problem with the Apple TV remote as it's currently set up is, by feel, it's hard to orient which one's the top and which one's the bottom. And although it's got that touch sensitive space at the top that I would argue there are a lot of things I like about it.
Scrubbing is great.
I really like the gesture where you put your finger down on the right or the left and then click, and it's a jump back or a jump
miss
forward
sometimes, which is the only frustration I have. That not every app does it either. Some seem like they're touchier about
there's
it than
some
others too.
Very annoying apps that like are like, no, we're reinventing
but I like
what every
that.
Button
I
on
agree.
The Apple TV remote is, and it's like, no,
that's
you're,
a good
don't do that.
I agree that there are some good features. It's just, it feels like a design failure.
It's the it's actually, so I've said it's like the Touch Bar. It's also like the third generation iPod, had those touch sensitive buttons, where the idea there again is you're trying to use it on feel. Great thing about the iPod is you can reach into your pocket and find the iPod and click to pause or play, if people remember the iPod. But if your fingers brushed against one of those buttons, and those were the pause and play buttons, and you had to feel around to feel like, is this number one or number two? I'm not looking down. If you touch another button, it does the thing for the other button, you have to look. You literally have to look. And it only lasted one generation. Defenders of that product, you're wrong. And also, even Apple abandoned it immediately because it was such a disaster. It was such a bad interface.
It replaced the scroll wheel, which was so good.
Which is so good. In fact, I was thinking, if you really wanted to go iPod-like for an Apple TV remote, you should bring back the scroll wheel, which is a gesture that kind of feels a little bit better and is easier to orient on, and maybe a little less destructive if you just lay your finger on it. But the Apple TV remote, like, again, if you misorient and you touch the wrong thing, you suddenly swiped somewhere or pushed down a little bit too hard and clicked it, and bad things happen. So, like, I appreciate Parker's thing that he mocked up, which is actually adorable, but it's like a million times no. And my favorite remotes are always ones that have buttons on them. And I'm going to say it, I think the touch pad area in the Apple TV remote is nice. I think the problem with it is it's too easy to touch it wrong, and it's too hard to orient it properly.
I don't like using it to navigate particularly either. I find that counterintuitive because the swiping with the grid icon, because of the way it's like a cursor selecting things and then you're swiping around, it doesn't, I don't like that. I prefer having buttons to press and move you through the grid.
Buttons are nice.
It feels much nicer. So I agree, there's utility to it, but I think, you know, I don't know, even with, if they got rid of the touch area, I feel like I would miss some of those features, but I also feel like that's a trade-off I'd be willing to make, because there are other ways. I've definitely used Siri to be like, skip forward half an hour or jump back, you know, 10 minutes or something like that. And it works pretty well in a lot of cases. You know, there's alternate ways to handle some of these things. I like the idea of a scroll wheel. That actually is pretty cool. But it would probably require them to do some rejiggering to how the Apple TV interface works. It is a product that's stuck around and kind of outlived its usefulness. I mean, it's been around longer than that iPod, I think, edition was around, or the, you know, buttonless shuffle, or all those other mistakes that Apple has made. And it feels like they've really, I mean, they doubled down, right? They, when they revamped the TV at one point, they added like a circle around one of the buttons. Now you can tell which button it is, you know? It's like, all right, that's sort of fixing the problem, but not really, guys.
It's so subtle. So,
yeah, the Apple TV has not really seen a lot of updates in recent years, which, you know, could either let you feel like maybe they don't care about it, or alternatively, maybe they're working on something and haven't actually shipped it yet. Hard to tell.
Silly. Very silly. I would be happy if they just did a physical, you know, again, another physical remote.
I've seen a couple of those ones where it's like cable companies that distribute Apple TVs have designed their own remotes. And there was one recently, I have to look it up again, but it was only available, you know, to cable customers or something like that. But it had a Siri button on it. And I was like, if I could get a hold of that, that would be great, because that would have the stuff I want.
Yeah, I have a couple of, I mean, the TiVo remote is really good. The Logitech remote is good. It's got numbers and stuff on it that aren't really necessary for the Apple TV, but that's fine. You can do a simplified one. Honestly, the Roku remote that came with my TV is good. It's little, but it's got like nice buttons, and they feel good, and you can orient based on feel. And these are the things that I want. I want it to feel good in my hand. I want to be able to orient based on feel, and I want to be able to navigate without having to look down and see what I'm navigating. And the Apple TV remote, as currently designed, is not great for that. I find that if I watch it and then pick it up and hold it in my hand so it never can change orientation, that it works okay. But otherwise, anyway, what I'm saying is I appreciate that article, but that ain't it. That ain't it.
Yep, I'm with you. I mean, and I currently am back to only having mostly two devices on attached to my TV. It's mainly the Xbox and the Apple TV. I do occasionally, you know, when we go through a spate of playing Switch games, there is a Switch there too. But like, all I really use the Logitech for is to turn on the TV and switch the input.
This looks really good. You sent me a link to this.
Yeah, I really want this
electronics remote where it's got a Siri button and it's got a what looks like a wheel with a button in the center.
I think it's probably just a D-pad is my guess.
Oh, you're right. It probably is a D-pad. But still, that's not bad. That's not bad at all.
I know. I really like the look of that remote, and I would definitely buy it, but it's one of those ones that's only being sold like through their partnered you know, cable company, and it's like, but I want it.
Apple could rethink.
They could do a nicer version of this, like, and I would be very happy with that. And if it had the ability to maybe control some other devices or something, that would be great. I don't know. They try a little too hard to make the remote the awesome best thing, and forgot that some of what has made it the remote so long lived is the fact that they work pretty well.
Yeah,
not everything needs to be reinvented.
Yeah. One more thing before we go. Last weekend I was on Tech Meme.
Yeah,
and my response to that was, of course, what a slow news day if my story is on Tech Meme. But it was a slow news weekend. And that was my story from last Friday. I did a story where I talked to some developers and basically followed up Apple's big magnanimous announcement that they were going to support the Web Extensions API in Safari, which is the essentially the Chrome and Firefox extension API. It's like, good news, everybody. All those Chrome and Firefox extensions will work on Safari now, except the developers of those extensions have to modify them in order to fit inside Apple security systems. And then they also have to have Xcode and be a developer and submit them to the Mac App Store.
Right.
And at the time I thought, well, nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to do that. And what I found is, after, you know, several months of it being out there, of Safari 14 being out there, that some people are doing it. Especially I would say, like, companies that have web extensions for their web services seem to have been motivated to do it because it's another slice of the market.
Yeah.
and they get in the Mac App Store, and that gets to be promoted there, and it lets them get access to Safari users. And then there are some people, so many of these extensions are open source projects, or they're, you know, one person projects or very small group projects, and they're doing it because they love it. They're yeah. building this thing because they want to build it. And there it's a lot more hit and miss. I did find one of the most popular extensions in some circles anyway is library extension. I talked to the guy who writes library extension, which is great if you haven't used it because you're a Safari user. It any book page you're on, basically, it adds a little box to it that says if that book is in your local library. So instead of buying it on Amazon, you can be on the book's Amazon page and it'll put in a little box that says there's a copy at your library. Click to get it. It's great. It's great. But it doesn't work on Safari. And I talked to the guy who writes it and has been writing it for 10 years. And he said, well, I didn't have a modern Mac. The only Mac we had in the house that was modern is the one that my daughter uses, so I wasn't going to take it away from her. But I did just get an M1 Mac, and I am trying it out. And it was funny because he's like, there's some stuff we do that Apple doesn't want extensions to do, so I'm probably going to have to write a little like mini app that is in Swift in order to do this one thing and pass the data back. So I have to do that. And it's like, because of Apple's, again, good, but very specific security limitations that they put on it that, in this case, break a part of his extension. He says he's talked to people at Apple, and he gets the sense that if he asks them for help, they will point him in the right direction. So it's not a bad story at all. In fact, I'd say it's encouraging, but I think it's also interesting that 3 months in, that guy is still in investigation mode. Right. And it will probably happen, but that shows you just how much extra work might go into something like that. And if you're a developer of an extension that, you know, you don't use a Mac, and, you know, it's never going to happen. And so the one that you and I have used, which is, what is it, Beyond 20?
Beyond 20, yeah.
Which is this thing that, for those who are not into playing fantasy role-playing games on the internet, it takes the character sheets from D&D Beyond, and you can click on them and it'll roll dice in Roll 20, which is where you're playing the game. Trust me, it's good. It's really helpful. And that I went through the like GitHub comments because there was people who were asking, will you do this for Safari now? And he posted, the developer of it posted a lengthy response, which basically said, no, I'm very busy. This is kind of a passion project. Microsoft wants me to put it in the Microsoft Edge extension store, which would require no work. And I'm still not doing that because it's like a distraction I don't need. I've never used a Mac. I don't know anything about the Mac App Store. There are a bunch of things I'd probably have to change in order to use their security model. So no. And the good thing is, you know, some of these things, if they are open source projects, there is a thing that happens now where, like, you can basically crowdfund forks or code submissions. So it could be that some of these projects, people will like basically put up a bounty that says, 80 people are willing to donate $3,000 for you to get this in the Mac App Store. And then a developer looks at that, and it doesn't have to be the developer of the app. It could be any developer if it's open source, and say, oh, I'll do that. I know how to do that. That shouldn't be a problem. And then I can cash in the bounty and I get the money. So some of that might happen, but I thought that was a really good example of a guy who's like, I don't have a Mac. I don't know anything about Apple stuff. This is a passion project. I don't use Safari, and therefore it will never happen. And it's a shame because that plugin is probably, you know, my guess would be a few hours work away from working in Safari.
I spent an hour when the web extensions thing was first announced and released in the betas. I spent an hour. I like got the GitHub project for Beyond 20 and started trying to like make it work, and realized very quickly I was just out of my depth. Like, I'm not, my programming knowledge, you know, a lot of that stuff is written in like JavaScript and, you know, web technologies. And I have some fluency with that, but not enough to make it work. So I spent a while and then realized like this was not going to be like change 2 lines of code and everything is great, right? Like it was going to be more complicated than that. And I was like, yeah, I don't have enough investment in this to spend the time doing that. But you know, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody else wanted to take that up at some point. And like you said, because it's an open source project, somebody can do that.
Yeah. My understanding is that some of the debugging tools that are used by a lot of extension developers are themselves a web extension that is not on, doesn't work with Safari.
Yeah, it's frustrating with Safari sometimes because I love it. It's the browser I use every day.
Yep.
But there are weird blind spots when it comes to the rest of the web, right? Like I was recently, you know, you've recommended to me several times like Zencastr, right, for recording podcasts. And I've used it and it's fine. Like it's a pretty good solution. I've recommended it to other people who just need like a really easy way to record a podcast with some multiple people. But it doesn't work in Safari because the technology isn't supported. And it's like, I don't know, that's a bummer. Like, why haven't they done that? I don't know. It's frustrating at times because you feel like Safari is such a popular browser. It's got to be used by so many people, and Apple. Well,
and it's so great on the Mac. I mean, like, that's the thing. Yeah. It is fast and better battery life on laptops and all those things. So here's my theory, and this is something I mentioned at the end of the post, which is if Apple wants people to support web extensions on Safari, I have a solution for them, which is add extensions to iOS. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's the tweet. It's not a tweet. It's a podcast, right? Like, if you could suddenly say, oh, look, it works on iPhones now. Your extension now works on the iPhone. I think a lot of people, and the iPad and the Mac all at once, you just have to do this one thing. I think a lot of extension developers would be like, oh, well, yeah, now I need to do that because that's a huge audience, right? Mac users using Safari, it's not even, I had to keep being sure not to say works on the Mac because these extensions all work on the Mac. They work on the Mac and Chrome and Firefox and Edge. They just don't work in Safari, but they don't work on iOS at all. So I don't know if Apple ever wants to do extensions in browsers on iOS because that is, again, it's weird.
But especially
on the iPad. But like if they did that, that would be, then I think a lot of people would pay attention because then it's like a whole market that you have no access to right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, it was a fun story to do. I don't usually do like that level of reporting. It's been a while. You know, it's a lot of extra work, but I thought in that case, it was a question that I wanted to have an answer to, and nobody was going to write that story except me. So I wrote that story. Yeah, there it is. So TechMeme, thank you on a very slow Sunday for posting my story on your site. Yeah, maybe that's it for this week. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's always next week.
There is always next
Until week. The end of the world, there's always next week.
Oh, boy. That sounds like a great title for something.
Yes. But, you know, until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.